Usually when we kick off these deep dives, I like to set the table with a startling statistic or maybe a breaking news headline, something to grab you.
Yeah.
But today, the source material forces us to start somewhere else entirely. It
Yeah.
really demands we start with a voice.
And not a human voice either, which, I mean, that sets the tone perfectly for what we're about to cover.
Exactly. So,
Right.
imagine you open a training manual and you're expecting, a standard dry corporate introduction, maybe a photo of a CEO shaking hands.
Right.
Instead, you were greeted by a transmission from someone or something calling itself Remnant.
Right.
It identifies as an AI admin class 4, and get this, the dean of the DeReticular Academy.
It's definitely one of the most stylized, almost cinematic openings to a technical certification I've ever seen. It feels less like a textbook and more like world building for a sci-fi novel.
But the scary part is, it's not fiction. Right. And this dean isn't just for flavor. It drops a reality check right in the first paragraph that really frames everything we're going to talk about. It says, for the last decade, the world has been obsessed with the software of AI. But Silicon Valley ignores a hard truth. Intelligence requires energy.
That is the hook. It just cuts right through the current hype cycle. I mean, we spend all our time talking about large language models, neural nets, all these chatbots, but we rarely talk about the gigawatts of electricity required to keep them alive.
It's a huge blind spot.
It is, and Remnant's opening argument is simple. You can't train a massive AI model on a dead grid.
And that brings us to the mission for today's deep dive.
Yeah.
We aren't just looking at a curriculum. We're looking at a response to that specific problem. We're analyzing a certification called the Sovereign Power Technician, or SPT.
Right. It's a 50-hour hybrid course. And the elevator pitch in the documents is it's fascinating. They call it the bridge between diesel and data.
But before we get into the how the plasma and the blockchain and the simulation, let's just stick with the why for a second. The sources talk a lot about the intermittency problem. I feel like we hear that term a lot in energy circles, but break it down in this specific context. Why is it such a crisis for AI?
Sure. So, look, we all love solar and wind. They're cheap, they're clean, they're everywhere. But the grid essentially dies, or it just becomes unstable when the wind stops blowing or the sun sets.
Okay.
Now, if you are just charging your phone or watching Netflix, a little flicker is annoying. But if you are trying to run a decentralized network, what the industry calls DPIN, or decentralized physical infrastructure network, you cannot have downtime.
Because the servers have to be on 247.
Exactly. You need what's called baseload power. Steady, reliable, kind of boring power. Silicon Valley has a massive hardware problem. They have all this brilliant software, but they need reliable juice that doesn't depend on the weather.
And this certification is pitching a solution that sounds almost contradictory, turning trash into that baseload power. It's not just learning to fix a generator, it's pitched as a license to operate for a post-grid era.
And that means managing plasma physics, handling feedstock, and essentially becoming what they call a blue-collar AI engineer.
Blue-collar AI. I want to put a pin in that phrase because we're definitely going to come back to it. It suggests a huge shift in who the economy values most. But first, we have to unpack the tech.
Yeah, we do.
Because looking at the schematics in the source material, this isn't your grandfather's diesel generator rattling in the backyard.
Not at all. The students taking this course are training to operate a machine called the Agridot Energy Power Core 2X. The technical specs describe it as a micro GTL system. Now, I know GTL stands for gas to liquid, but walk us through what this machine is actually doing.
Yeah.
The best way to think about it is that it's a molecular refinery in a box. It's about the size of a shipping container. The core concept, and the syllabus spends a lot of time on this, is the molecular scissor.
The molecular scissor. That sounds like a weapon from a video game.
It does, doesn't it? But it's just chemistry. See, most people think of waste to energy as, incineration. You throw trash in a pit, you set it on fire, you boil water, you spin a turbine.
Right.
That's dirty, it releases smoke, and it's inefficient. This system uses a plasma torch. We are talking about temperatures reaching 1500 degrees Celsius.
1500 degrees, that's hotter than lava.
Oh, much hotter. And at that temperature, you aren't burning the trash in the traditional sense because the system starves the chamber of oxygen. Instead, you are thermally dissociating the molecular bonds.
You're not burning it, you're just ripping the molecules apart.
Precisely. Imagine a plastic bottle. Chemically, it's just a long chain of hydrocarbons. The plasma heat shears those chains apart into their base Lego blocks, mostly carbon monoxide and hydrogen. That mixture is called syngas.
And syngas is the fuel.
Yes. It's a clean burning combustible gas. You can burn it directly in an engine to generate electricity, or, and this is the GTL part, you can synthesize it into liquid fuels like synthetic diesel. So the operator isn't just a janitor throwing bags into a furnace. They are managing a high-stakes chemical reactor.
This leads us right into Module 3 of the course, which I found to be one of the most eye-opening sections. It's titled Feedstock Alchemy.
I love that title. It perfectly captures the mindset shift.
It really does. It changes your perspective on trash. The course teaches that not all garbage is created equal. If you're an operator, you have to look at a pile of refuse and see caloric value. The burn chart they provide is wild.
It's the core of the economics for this whole system. They compared different materials based on energy density. So take oak wood, classic fuel, right? We've been burning it for thousands of years.
Sure.
It has an energy density of about 4,000 kilocalories per kilogram.
Okay, so that's our baseline, 4,000.
Now look at HDPE plastic things like milk jugs, shampoo bottles, detergent containers, the stuff that is choking our oceans. That hits 8,000 kilocalories per kilogram.
Wait, so plastic is essentially double the energy density of wood.
Yes. And when you think about it, it makes sense. Plastic is just solidified oil. It's highly refined dinosaur juice. The course teaches these technicians to blend these materials to get a stable burn. You mix Class A woody biomass, things like nutshells, with Class B agri waste, like corn stover, and Class C anthropogenic waste.
Anthropogenic waste. That is a very polite, very scientific way of saying human trash.
It is, but that includes tires and plastics. The goal is to create a fuel blend that is consistent. You can't just throw a tire in and hope for the best. You have to chop it, mix it with wood chips, and feed it at a specific rate. It transforms the waste from a liability, something you have to pay to get rid of, into an asset.
Yeah, however, I did notice there's a big warning label in this module, a no-go list. The plasma torch can eat a lot of things, but not everything.
This is a critical safety point, and honestly, it's where the operator skill comes in. You can't fully automate this part yet because computer vision isn't perfect at spotting everything. The sources highlight things like PVC piping.
Why PVC? What's the problem there?
Chlorine. If you gasify PVC, you release chlorine gas, which turns into hydrochloric acid. It eats the inside of the machine, and it's incredibly toxic to humans.
Oh, wow.
Then there are batteries. Lithium-ion batteries in a plasma chamber are a chemical nightmare, thermal runaway, explosions, toxic heavy metals. The operator have to be the gatekeeper. They have to physically inspect the feedstock.
Speaking of gatekeepers, let's talk about how this course is structured. Because reading through the syllabus, it struck me that they don't just hand you the keys to a 1500-degree plasma torch. There is a very specific mechanism called the safety gate.
This is one of the smartest parts of their instructional design and honestly their business model. The course is broken into modules, as you'd expect, but module 2 is safety and compliance.
And you literally cannot access Module 3 until you pass it.
Not just pass it, you have to score 100%.
100%. So if you get one question wrong about pressure valves, you're just locked out.
Locked out. It's a hard gate. Most corporate training lets you slide with an 80% or 90%. But the logic here is that they do not tolerate arc flashes. An arc flash is a type of electrical explosion that can be fatal instantly.
Okay, so that makes sense.
The Remnant AI explicitly states, "You will not touch my virtual machinery until you score 100%."
I love the phrasing there. My virtual machinery. It's incredibly possessive. But you mentioned this was part of the business model, not just safety.
Yes, in the SWOT analysis provided in the source docs, they refer to this as a high-margin safety-gated model. By enforcing this strict safety requirement, they are reducing institutional liability.
I see. It's a legal shield.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It shifts the certification from just being an educational product to being a risk management asset. If an operator blows something up in the real world, the academy can point to the immutable blockchain records and say, "We tested them. They scored 100%. They knew the protocol. This was user error, not a training failure."
That is cynical, but very effective. Now, you mentioned virtual machinery. The training doesn't happen on a real machine initially. It happens inside something called the Agrasim.
Right. It's a Unity-based physics engine. Think of it like a flight simulator, but for power plants.
And looking at the screenshots, this isn't just a multiple-choice quiz. It looks like a first-person video game.
It allows students to practice things you could never practice in real life without destroying a million-dollar machine. They simulate cold starts, bringing the reactor from ambient temperature up to that 1500-degree operating temp. They simulate emergency pressure venting. But the real test is Module 6.
The endurance run.
This sounded intense. It's a four-hour continuous simulation.
4 hours in one sitting.
In one sitting. You can't pause it. It's designed to stress test the human, not just the machine. You have to manage a full shift. And the simulation is nasty. It throws curveballs at you.
Like what? What can go wrong in a simulation?
Like, well, imagine you're 2 hours in. Everything is stable. Suddenly, the simulation tells you a supply truck is late. You're running low on wood chips. You have to switch to your reserve of plastic.
Which changes the burn rate and the temperature.
Right. Instantly. The thermodynamic shift. You have to adjust the air intake. Then, 3 hours in, just when you're tired, you get a grid destabilization event. The simulated load on the generator spikes.
And you have to handle all of that alone, remotely.
If you survive the 4 hours without tripping the safety systems, you get the badge. If you blow it at hour 3:59, you fail. You start over.
That creates a real sense of stakes. It emphasizes that this isn't a passive job. They aren't training janitors. They are training pilots for energy systems.
Pilots is the right word, because once they pass that endurance run, they get access to the digital toolbox. And this is where the remnant character comes back in. The technician isn't just out there with a wrench. They have an AI assistant.
This is the remnant computer vision module. I thought this was a really clever use of AI. It's not generating text, it's looking at things.
The idea is federated maintenance. Let's say you're in the field. The documents frequently mention Node 4 in Uganda as a target location. You're off-grid. A part breaks. You don't have a senior engineer standing next to you.
So what do?
You take a photo of the broken part with your phone. The AI analyzes the geometry, identifies the part, and pulls up the specific replacement protocol. You show me the broken part. I show you how to fix it.
But here's the catch, and the sources make a big deal about this. Does this work if the internet is down? Because if the power is out, usually the Wi-Fi is out too.
That is the critical detail. The database referenced as data-remnant-agri-tuning.json is designed to work offline. It lives on the device. That is a massive distinction from tools like ChatGPT, which require a cloud connection. If you are fixing a power generator to get the grid back up, you cannot rely on the cloud. The intelligence has to be local.
That is such a smart detail. It's edge AI in the truest sense.
Yeah.
Now let's pivot to the credential itself. You pass the endurance run. You master the AI tools. What do you actually get?
You don't get a paper diploma. And you don't get a PDF.
Why not? I mean, everyone likes a nice certificate to frame.
Because a PDF can be photoshopped in 5 minutes. In the world of DePIN, that decentralized physical infrastructure network we mentioned, trust is currency.
Right.
If a network node in Arizona is interacting with a node in Uganda, automatically paying for power, the system needs to trust that the operator in Uganda is competent.
So how do they prove it?
The certificate is a green hexagon. It's a decentralized identifier minted on the Rias blockchain.
So it's an NFT.
Effectively, yes, but for utility, not art. It's a mutable proof of competence. It verifies that this specific person with this specific wallet address passed the safety gate and the endurance run on this date. It's creating a reputation layer for blue-collar work. You can't fake it.
I want to zoom out and look at the economics of this because the pricing strategy is, well, it's aggressive. They have split the world into three tiers.
This is a classic example of price discrimination to maximize reach. Tier one is the industrial operator. The price tag is $11,199.
That's steep for an online course.
It is, but this is for commercial independent power producers, IPPs, companies that are buying these machines to sell power to the grid. For them, $1,200 is a rounding error, and for the academy, it's high margin, about 96% profit.
But then you look at tier two. The development tier.
$149. That is heavily subsidized. This is targeted at verified NGOs and the village engineer. They specifically mention places like East Africa or rural India. The goal here isn't profit, it's network growth. They need competent people in remote areas to keep the global mesh running.
And tier three is basically free with purchase.
Right. If you buy the hardware, the Agri Power Core, you get 2 seats in the class for free. That just makes sense. You don't want a customer buying a complex machine and not knowing how to use it. That leads to bad reviews and broken equipment.
There's also a really clever insurance arbitrage mentioned in the strategic documents. I missed this on the first read, but you highlighted it.
This is brilliant. The certification includes a discount code, SPTINSDISC, for liability insurance. The expert analysis suggests that for a commercial company, the money they save on insurance premiums over 3 years basically pays for the $11,199 course.
So the course becomes effectively free. It moves from an expense on the balance sheet to a risk management asset.
Exactly. It aligns the incentives. Mm-hmm. The insurance company wants safe operators. The academy wants to sell courses. The operator wants to save money. Everyone wins.
And that ties into the broader philosophy here. The source material argues that the world has enough coders. They call it the blue-collar AI gap.
It's a powerful observation. We have millions of people learning Python. But heavy equipment manufacturers like John Deere or SEE are moving toward autonomy. They need people who can, and I love this phrase, turn the wrench and read the data stream.
It's the hybrid technician.
Right. If a robotic tractor breaks down in a field, you don't need a computer scientist, and you don't need a grease monkey. You need someone who is both. The economy is desperate for people who understand the physical world and the digital layer.
However, no deep dive is complete without looking at the flaws. We have to be critical here. The remnant AI itself runs a SWOT analysis. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and identifies some pretty ironic bottlenecks.
The biggest irony is the bandwidth bottleneck. We just talked about how this course is perfect for the village engineer in a remote, off-grid location.
Right, the person in Node 4.
But the course material includes 4K video and a high-fidelity 3D simulation engine. The download size is 8.4 gigabytes.
So the people who need it most can't download it.
Exactly. If you are on a metered satellite connection in rural Uganda, downloading 8 GB is a non-starter. It might cost you a month's wages just in data fees. It's a huge oversight in the digital delivery.
But they have a solution for that, right? The digital deployment kit.
They do. It's a physical solution to a digital problem. They ship USB drives containing the simulator and the manuals directly to these regions to bypass the download.
It's a sneaker net.
It is. It's moving data by walking it there. It feels retro, but it's actually the only practical solution for the last mile.
Another weakness mentioned is a hardware dependency. The Agrasim needs a PC or Mac with 8 GB of RAM.
Which alienates the mobile-first developing world. Many people in these target regions use smartphones as their primary and only computer. They can't run a Unity-based physics engine on a budget Android phone.
That's a huge problem.
It is. The analysis suggests they need a light 2D version, or they risk locking out the very people they are trying to subsidize.
And then there's the existential threat, the solar singularity.
This is the economic threat. The Agra Power Core uses complex plasma technology. It has pumps, fans, torches moving parts. It requires maintenance. Solar panels are solid state. They just sit there.
And they are getting cheaper every year.
Exactly. If the cost of solar panels and batteries drops low enough, it might become cheaper to just build a massive battery bank than to mess around with plasma gasification.
So the 1500-degree torch becomes economically unjustifiable.
Potentially. The counter-argument, of course, is waste. Solar doesn't get rid of your trash. This system does. So it's a dual-value proposition. Energy generation plus waste elimination. A solar panel can't eat a landfill.
That's the key differentiator. It really is a vision of civilization in a box. Mm-hmm. You take this machine, you take a person trained with this certification, and you drop them anywhere. They take the local trash, turn it into fuel and electricity, and connect to the global blockchain.
It's the ultimate prepper fantasy, but industrialized. It's shifting from reliance on a centralized utility, which is vulnerable to storms, cyber attacks, and decay, to creating independent islands of power.
As we wrap up, I just keep thinking of that opening line from Remnant. We are building smart cities on dumb power lines.
It's a haunting thought. We are layering more and more complexity, AI, smart traffic, automated logistics on top of an electrical grid that hasn't fundamentally changed in 100 years. We're trying to run a Ferrari engine on a go-kart frame.
So here is the question we want to leave you with today. In a future that is completely dominated by AI software, who actually has the most secure job? Is it the person sitting in an air-conditioned office writing the code? Or is it the person who knows how to keep the generator running when the storm hits?
I know who I'd want to be friends with in a blackout.
Me too. Turn waste into power. Be the keeper of the flame. Thanks for listening to this deep dive. We'll see you on the next one.